your soul.
At the company's annual Christmas party, there's always a table full of presents. One of the presents is extra special. We just don't know which one. At this year's party, there were about 300 employees gathered in the event space on the first floor. Far below the offices and boardrooms on the upper floors where the company typically does business. We'd all been led inside and instructed to pick one of the nicely wrapped gifts off the table. This was no different from the year before, or any of the years before that. I selected one at random. There was no point in trying to figure out which box held which gift, so I just grabbed something from the middle of the table. Last year, I unwrapped my gift to find a voucher for an all-expenses-paid ski vacation to Colorado. My wife, kids, and I had a wonderful time. Another such gift would be greatly appreciated, of course. Our CEO, Mr. Jackson, was abnormally cheerful. But I suppose that was just the Christmas brandy kicking in. As the happy holiday banter flittered across the room, he stood on a platform and held up his arms to silence the crowd, and then waited for the excited chatter to recede. It was typical for him to place a high priority on brevity, and today was no different. "Well, we've had yet another very successful year," he said, as drunken applause and enthusiastic hoots and hollers erupted from the crowd. He paused a moment to let everyone quiet down, though the smile on his face showed that he was enjoying the festive atmosphere. "Sales are up 125% over last year," he continued. "Complaints are down to historically low levels. It's safe to say that this year we've been firing on all cylinders. And Newsweek even named us among the top 50 most ethical companies in the United States." We all applauded loudly at that. Mr. Jackson took a moment to soak in all the cheers, and then continued as he looked out to the crowd. "And while we owe most of our success to you, the employee, let's not forget the good luck and fortune that's granted upon us each year by our benefactor." The clapping continued. I looked around the room. The long-term employees seemed to be the happiest, and in fact, even most of the new employees seemed pretty happy as well. There were, however, a couple of first-year employees who appeared to be a bit fidgety. "And now, let's get to the reason why we're all here," Mr. Jackson said. "The gifts. Yes, I hope you all find enjoyment from them." He then stepped down from the platform as we all looked down at the boxes in our hands. The tradition in the company is that the lower-level employees start opening their gifts first, followed by the supervisors, and then the managers. Even Mr. Jackson gets a gift he must open. The sound of wrapping paper being ripped from the boxes spread across the room as the employees anxiously tore into their gifts. Next to me, a young first-year sales associate opened his box. I saw a huge smile of relief spread across his face as he reached inside and pulled out a brand new Rolex Explorer. "Wow, that's a nice watch," I said to him. He gave a big goofy-ass smile as he slipped it onto his wrist. Right across from me, I watched another newbie pull out a key to a brand new Mercedes. "Nice," I shouted to her. She looked around excitedly. "It'll be parked out front," I told her. I knew this from experience, since I was gifted a car several years ago. Soon, all the lower-level employees had opened their gifts, and the supervisors started in on theirs. I began to carefully unwrap mine. I'll admit, at that moment, I was scared. I spent my entire year feeling great, but every year, those few seconds I spend opening my gifts seem like they go on for an hour. As I lifted the lid from the box, I was happy to find a stack of cash inside. Can't go wrong with cash, I thought. I flipped through the stack to get a quick estimate of its value. It was probably about $5,000. It was right about then that I heard someone scream. I turned around to see Shirley, one of my fellow supervisors, holding an empty box in one hand. And in the other hand, she held the plain rock she just pulled out of it. "No," she said. "This isn't the box I wanted. This isn't the goddamn box I wanted. I wanted to get that one over there." She dropped her box and pointed to the lady who had been gifted the Mercedes. "But she grabbed that fucking box before I could get it." She was pretty upset now. People around her shook their heads in disappointment. "Shirley," I said in a low tone, "try to be a bit more dignified. It is the holidays and we are at a Christmas party." Shirley dropped the rock. It clattered on the ground as those around her began to step back slowly. "Fuck no. I will not be more dignified. This isn't fair." I have to admit to you, I was a bit disappointed with Shirley's reaction. She'd worked there long enough to know better than to pitch a fit, especially in a setting like this. Most people who end up with a rock accept the situation graciously, and some even give a brief thank you speech while they're still able. But Shirley? Yeah, she was still complaining as she was jerked into the air by some unseen force. She levitated a few feet off the ground as her body began to smolder. Smoke spilled out from the neckline of her blouse. Her hair began singeing at its tips and then burned all the way down to her scalp. Her eyes burst open, spattering vitria all over her nearby co-workers. Dark smoke began spewing from her mouth as her body slowly turned into ash, with the effect starting at her feet and working its way up to her head. After a long minute, Shirley was no more than a pile of slag on the ground. I'm going to miss Shirley. It's true that she didn't handle herself in a dignified manner when it mattered most, but she was a good coworker and friendly and damn good at her job. However, success and the finer things that accompany it don't come without some sort of sacrifice. And a sacrifice must be given every year. For those of you worried about Shirley, don't be. Her husband and children will be well compensated for their loss. After all, the company is incredibly successful and has plenty of money to throw around. And with our powerful benefactor continuing to look out for us, we're destined to have yet another banner year. Anyway, if anyone's looking for a job, we have an opening at the supervisory level. Prior supervisory experience is helpful, but not absolutely essential. The job offers fantastic compensation, an unheard-of benefits package, year-long perks, and of course, an absolute killer annual Christmas party, which is not to be missed. Happy holidays to you all, and I hope you have a Merry Christmas. My eyes shut open, reflexively tightened up and looked towards the door. It's 12:01 a.m. Christmas morning, and at any moment the door to the bedroom will burst open and my two beautiful children will run in giggling with presents already in hand. Seconds passed and nothing happened. It looked like it took a full minute before I remembered no one would be coming through the door this year. The kid's accident was only a couple of months ago. I wake up most mornings, and for the briefest moment every day, I forget they're gone. I find myself lying in bed, listening for their laughter or cries for breakfast to fill the house, before the pain of losing them hits me as fresh as the day it happened. It was a car accident that took them away. I was supposed to pick them up after school, but work ran late. I called my daughter Samantha, who was 13, 3 years older than her brother Ryan was, and told her they would have to walk home. It was only a couple of blocks, and they had done it plenty of times before, so it wasn't a big deal. But on that day, it would be. She was only a kid, around the age of 25, and did not see them crossing the street. She was probably texting, eating, or doing one of the 100 other things people do while driving other than paying attention to the roads. It didn't matter what she was doing. She hit both of them, and they didn't make it. Ryan died right there on the spot while the ambulance tried to bring Samantha to the hospital in time to save her life. That was the hope, at least. They weren't fast enough, and in the span of about 20 minutes, my entire life was destroyed. Janet, my wife at the time, blamed me. Of course she did. It wouldn't have happened if I had just picked them up, as I was supposed to. She made it through the funeral and the burials before leaving me. And thinking back on it, I couldn't blame her. We were never going to recover from that. There was no way she was going to get over that. I can't stand the sight of myself either. That's why all the mirrors in the house are shattered. And why the gun I bought last week was already loaded and waiting in the nightstand by the empty bed. All of these thoughts rush through my head as I drag myself out of bed and put my head in my hands. It's the first Christmas I have to spend alone. The house dark and empty. Last year at this time, the kids were awake and already opening the one special present they picked out to start Christmas with. The tree would be lit, casting a festive glow in the living room. The smell of cocoa and coffee would be strong in the air. But it was the laughter and joy that would wake me up the most. As a parent, there is nothing better than seeing your kids excited and happy, and nothing does that more than opening presents on Christmas Day. I closed my eyes and tried to collect my thoughts, but a sound from the living room grabbed my attention. It sounded like the soft thud of little feet trying to be as quiet as they snuck through the house. A sound I have not heard in months. Shuffling off the bed, I made my way towards the sound, opening the door to the bedroom and looking out to the empty living room. This is where they would be sitting, right under the tree, presents in hand, waiting for a sign they could start ripping into their presents. Of course, no one is there now. The room was dark and the fake tree was still in its box, propped up against the wall and unopened, untouched. It hurt too much not to try to get ready for Christmas without them, and it hurt too much to try. Looking at the empty living room, I could almost feel them there, sitting, legs crossed, looking towards our room, waiting to see if we were ready. They would each get to open their one present and then get whatever was in their stockings, mostly little dollar store trinkets and candy. But it was still exciting to see them, even though they were getting too old for the cheap toys. It was never going to be that way again. This holiday of love and joy for everyone else will be a constant reminder of what I lost, made worse by the fact that all other families, neighbors, and even strangers are coming together. Putting aside their differences and problems to have this one special day together, and here I am, alone. The weight of the gun in my hand snaps me back to the cold, dark room that is my life now. Reminding me there is still a way out. I look towards the tree and imagine it like it was last year, blue and silver twine circling bright blue LCD lights. Decadent glass orbs that were a wedding gift. And the two angels looking back at me, smiling and waiting for me to join them. "I'm coming," I thought, as I felt the cold metal of the gun barrel against my temple. I pulled the trigger. The sound is louder than anything I ever experienced, and I heard it a fraction before the pain hit. So loud, I could not see. The world went black as all my senses faded until all I could experience was the roar between my ears. When the pain finally came, it was almost a relief. The sound did not stop, but my focus shifted from an earth-shattering rumbling to a drill-like sensation that started in my temple and started boring inward. The combination of the sound and pain dropped me to my knees, the gun slipping from my hand. Reflexively, my hand shot up to the source of the pain and found nothing, not a mark at the spot just seconds ago I shot a bullet. "Can we open our presents now, Daddy?" A voice cut through the pain, and I struggled to open my eyes to find the source. The dark, empty room I was in moments ago was transformed when my eyes finally pried open. The first thing I noticed was everything is bathed in a red flickering light. The glow coming from the back wall where the unopened Christmas tree box used to sit. Now in its place was a fully decorated tree. Instead of the blue and silver of years past, the tree was now dressed in red tinsel and lights that contained actual flickering flames that gave the appearance of the tree being consumed by fire. Blood-red ornaments seemed to drip the light throughout the tree and reflected the glow around the room. Sitting on the floor in front of me, presents in hand, were my children. Their matching green Christmas pajamas, tinged red from the glowing tree, making them look muddy and unclean. Their backs were to me, but from where I was standing, I could see something was not right. Ryan's small arm was bent unnaturally at the elbow, giving it an insect-like appearance. And the hand that rested on his present was twitching uncontrollably. The fingers tapping on the wrapping paper of the present at first seemed like he was merely trying to open it. But the more I watched, I could tell it was an involuntary spasm of pain. The floor under Samantha's crossed legs was covered in blood. I couldn't tell if it was coming from her or the present on her lap. Maybe both. Her head turned towards me. Empty jet black eyes looked directly at me. A thin red trail of blood escaped her mouth, traveled upwards to her face, and started to pool in the corner of her right eye. "Can we open our presents, Daddy?" she asked again. Her voice deeper than I remembered, with none of the joy or light she had when she was alive. I had to get out of the house. The pain in my head is unbearable and diluting my equilibrium, but I managed to stumble out the front door. Outside was almost pitch black. All of the lights on the street and neighboring buildings were off. The only source of light was coming from a full blood moon, casting an odd dark orange hue over everything in sight. A loud, wet-sounding thud caught my attention down the road, and I slowly made my way to the apartment building down the street. The pain comes in waves, pressure building up in my skull, blinding me. It got so bad I fell to my knees again. There was not anything around that could help. The street was empty. The businesses and houses along the road were boarded up and looked abandoned. Nothing looked like it did yesterday. Once I was finally able to get moving, I saw a light on. In a living room a couple houses down the road, right where I fell. I walked toward the light and could see a figure standing at the window looking out towards the road in my direction. It was a woman, pale white skin, wearing a white wedding dress. As I got closer, she raised her hand as if waving to me, and I saw the marks on her arm. There was a long 4-inch slit starting from where her palm met her wrist down to her mid-forearm. Blood slowly pumped out in thick rivulets down her arm and onto her white dress, staining it instantly. The pain flared up again and I stumbled in front of the window. She looked down at me almost understandingly before she turned and disappeared inside her house. We could not help each other, but just as she seemed to understand what I was now going through, I felt I understood her loss as well. It was this day, Christmas Day, for most. It was a reminder of what they had. But for us, it was a reminder of what we lost. I collected myself for a moment before another loud, wet thud brought me back. I pushed onward, trying to find a way out of this nightmare. The street's Christmas decorations were still up, but the lights were all dead. The usual joyful colors of forest greeneries and red candy canes looked dull and corroded on the seemingly abandoned buildings. Ripped and haphazardly hung tinsel clung in patches to the dark streetlights. Movement above me caught my attention. Hanging from the streetlight, almost hidden by moss-colored tinsel, was a slightly overweight man. He appeared to have been dead for some time. His dark features made even more obscure by the pooling of blood in his face and around the noose he hung by his neck from. His large fat tongue stuck out between thick swollen lips like a diseased overgrown worm. He was dressed in a dirty Santa suit that seemed to have a lot of wear and not enough care on it. And I can smell the sweet and vile mixture of alcohol and vomit. Another wave of pain and pressure made me collapse into a ball directly under the man. The unkempt Santa's eyes shot open and he looked at me. He began to struggle against the rope holding him to the streetlight, his legs kicking, rocking himself violently back and forth while grunting for help. Just another sad soul claimed by this unholy night. All I could do was crawl forward. The pain kept me from getting to my feet. I could not help the man. I could not help my family, and I cannot help myself. I hear the thud again, this time right beside me. The sound was a wet smack of flesh hitting something solid. I rolled over on my side and tried to get a look at what was making that horrid sound and found myself staring into the bloodshot eyes of a man in a bloody and ripped-up tailored suit. His body was smashed and broken. Blood leaked from his eyes and mouth into a dark, neatly trimmed jet-black goatee. He must have fell from a building to my left, some kind of business office. I couldn't tell what company, and reading and moving my head too much caused the pain to intensify. As I looked into the man's eyes, his pupils began to shift. He seems to be trying to focus on me. His bones seemed to rearrange themselves in his face and jaw, his mouth twisting into a surprised frown. He tried to raise himself up on his hands and knees, but the bones in his forearms were shattered and jagged cream-tinted shards were breaking through the skin. He shrieked in agony and collapsed back onto his stomach. I could hear a horrible grinding and tearing sound as his body shuddered. All I could do was watch in horror as the bones retreated into his skin. And while screaming, he forced his way upright once again. Standing in front of me, I could see that his body is almost completely healed. His left arm hung lower off of his shoulder. He stood on an ankle that was bent sideways on an angle that could only mean the bone was still broken, but all pain seemed to have left him. Instead, what replaced the agony on his face just moments before was a puzzled bewilderment. And as if I was not even there, he searched the surrounding area, looking for something he had just lost. He quickly found what he was looking for and straightened himself out. He adjusted what was left of his bloodied Christmas tree tie and walked back into the building I suspected he fell from. If you happen not to see the dark spreading blotches of blood or the rip and tears in his suit, he would look just like any other corporate businessman going to work Christmas morning. I feel a desperate need to get out of here, no matter what it would take. Ignoring the debilitating pain, I stood up and blindly started running, not caring about the direction I was heading. The only goal was to escape the awful things I had been witnessing. Nothing was going to slow me down, not even the pain, not the nauseating roar in my head, not even the loud, wet thud of a body hitting the pavement again behind me. I didn't stop running until my legs could no longer carry me, and out of breath I stumbled upon an abandoned house. The pain was too intense. I fought the urge to lie down, and using my shoulder, I forced the door to the house open and tripped into the living room. The living room of the house was dark, and the fake tree was still in its box, propped up against the wall, unopened. It hurt too much to not get ready for Christmas without them, and it hurt too much to try. Looking at the empty living room, I could almost feel them there, sitting, legs crossed, looking towards our room, waiting to see that we were ready. They would each get to open their one present and then get whatever was in their stocking, mostly little dollar store trinkets and candy. But it was still exciting to them, even though they were getting too old for the cheap toys. It was never going to be that way again. I feel the weight of the gun in my hand. I imagine seeing the kids sitting by the tree. I imagine Christmas how it's supposed to be, the best day of the year. The time when you are with your family and loved ones and all the pain is gone. I want their smiling faces to be the last thing I think about, and I put the gun to my head with tears welling up in my eyes. And I pull the trigger. The sound is louder than anything I have ever experienced. And it came before the pain. Christmas. Such a lovely, heartwarming holiday to relax and enjoy with your family. Everyone has at least one fond Christmas memory. And if you say you don't, well, you're just straight up lying to yourself. I am no exception to those with happy memories of the festive day. Drinking cocoa, relaxing by the fire, and hanging up ornaments with my family. The usual things a child would enjoy during the holiday season. However, there is one Christmas that I would never forget, and not in a good way. The year was 2009. I was 5 years old, living in a large farmhouse off in the rural Fairmont, Indiana. We usually spent Christmas at my grandmother's home, but this year we decided to do it in our own home. The setup was perfect. We had lights on the front of the house and the barn, festive tablecloths, and of course the big, shining pine tree in the living room. Decorated with lights, ornaments, tinsel, the usual works. December went through quickly. Joyful occasions and activities were done with the family, and everything went through normally. Soon enough, it reached Christmas Eve. The young me bounced around with relentless, unending energy in my pajamas around the home. Each time I went past the living room, I eyed the tree and, of course, the gifts that lined the floor under it, just for me. Well, and my step-siblings, of course, but that didn't matter. This little routine continued for several minutes until my mother told me it was time to go to bed. With some protest, I was eventually tucked under the covers and sent to sleep. My unlimited bounty of energy now seeming to have been depleted entirely. It wasn't long before my eyes closed and I drifted off into the grasp of sleep, with hopes of Santa coming through the night in my thoughts. I was awakened by a loud thud. My eyes gently fluttered open, still droopy, and my body groggy. Through my hazed and exhausted vision, I could just make out the figure of something in front of the door. Assuming the thud had been the slamming shut of it, was tall and incredibly thin, looking almost sickly. I couldn't make out any facial expressions with it being so far away and me being so tired. But I could see that its face was partially shrouded by a veil of thin, disheveled, greasy, gray hair. It was missing clumps from the scalp area, as if it had forcefully torn itself out. Adorning its head along with the hair were two long twisted horns like some sort of billy goat. The sight of it was enough to make my head spin. Was this Santa? That's what went through my mind as it looked around, hunched over like an animal searching for prey to pounce on. Eventually, it seemed to have locked its gaze on me. Its head turned, popping sounds coming from its neck like it were painfully cracking it with each change of an angle. My body immediately froze, a light gasp trying to leave my throat, but not a single sound came out. My sleepy eyes were now wide, locked onto the hidden face of the thing as it tilted its head curiously. I couldn't see a mouth, but it just... it felt like it was giving me a malicious grin. Quickly, my hands threw the covers over myself, clutching them and holding them like a shield over myself. Something any child would do for comfort in this situation. Believing that the blankets were valuable protection. Almost as soon as I did that, a rasping, harsh breath could be heard from the creature's direction. I began to hear light thumps against the creaky wooden floorboards of my room. Thump. Thump, thump. Footsteps approaching slowly, monotonously. My room was very large. It was actually one of the two living rooms turned into a room for me, while my parents took my older, smaller one and gave their old room to one of my step-siblings, just so all of us kids could have a room of our own. Even so, and with the slow pace of the footsteps, it seemed like it was growing closer rapidly. The footsteps were closer and closer, and almost lined up with the sound of my heartbeat. My breath was shaky and quick as it approached. Then nothing. The footsteps stopped, just beside my bed. I did my best to not hold my terrified breath. I felt something thin and jagged touch the blanket at my feet. A finger, I believe it was, though it could have been anything. Slowly, very slowly, it was dragged upward, passing my feet, running up my legs through the blanket. My body trembled, my face beginning to burn from how long I was holding my breath. It traveled at a painfully slow pace, trailing up the covers, feeling me through them, until it stopped at my head. It pressed down rather hard in a spot on my temple. I let out a strained cry, unable to break it any, unable to hold it anymore. The thing seemed to hesitate for a moment before I heard what I believed to be a gravelly, raspy chuckle, and it continued to press down. I swear that it ended up tearing through the blanket because I could feel the bony fingernail digging into my flesh. It was as if the thing was testing me to see how much pain I could take. I sobbed softly to myself, trying to call out for my mother to come and protect me. But like all of my other futile attempts to produce words, nothing but air exited my mouth. Soon enough, the thing began to trail down my face again with its fingernail. However, this time it was still pressing down forcefully. The nail left a small 1-inch cut along my temple before the pressure was relieved and the finger was pulled away entirely. Something that sounded like a painful gurgling rang throughout my room until my eyes were met with a shadow in front of me, seen through the thin blankets. It must have been that creature getting face to face with me. My eyes were still wide in horror as it grew closer and closer until I could feel its hot, sour breath puff through the cheap fabric. And after that, the feeling was immediately gone. I heard the footsteps again, except this time they were moving away from my bed, back into the direction they had come from. Another gurgling sound filled my ears as it left, lingering in my thoughts. Soon enough, I heard something moving its way up the stairs, opening a door and closing it before everything seemed to stop. After a minute of agonizing silence and the prayers that it was completely gone, I shakily lowered my covers to reveal nothing. I don't recall much of the rest of that night, other than me cautiously going to the bathroom to clean up a bloody nose that had suddenly made itself known after I revealed myself from my covers. At the time, I chalked it up to the humidifier, which had the tendency to make my nose bleed rather frequently at night. The next morning, I opened my presents slowly, without a word. My mother had noticed the small nick on my head, and concerned, she questioned me as to what had happened. I, of course, lied, saying I was tired and had tripped and fell against my bedpost. I didn't want to frighten her with any mention of that thing that had been in my room. After that Christmas Eve night, I haven't seen any trace of it. That thing. No evidence that it even existed. Though to this day, I still ponder each Christmas season. When I remember it, in the corner of my mind, just exactly what was that thing? A sick, messed up person dressed in a costume, looking more terrifying because of my grogginess? Some sort of, dare I even say it, a demon? I can't quite tell for sure. But I do know one thing. That was not Santa Claus. The soft thud of following footsteps echoed behind him as he hurried through the snowflakes toward home. They kept pace with him, quickening when he quickened, and slowing when he slowed. It was creepy. His flesh crawled at the sound, and he sped up, cursing himself for walking home alone from the midnight Christmas mass. Normally, not a pious man, the middle-aged bachelor had suddenly been struck by a wish to hear the old Christmas song sung once again by a church choir, and had walked across town to attend the service. Now he regretted his choice as he passed dark house after dark house in the snowy night, and the footsteps always followed. He sped up until he was nearly running and skidded into his street. A few more paces brought him to the bottom of his front steps. And as he dashed upon them, he realized suddenly that the following footsteps had ceased abruptly. He glanced behind him at the cross street from which he had just turned and saw only one pair of footprints in the snow-covered street, when there should have been two. He frowned in puzzlement, and then shuddered as a cold breeze struck him, driving snow against his collar and slammed against the door. The freezing white powder seemed to almost pass through the door, but that was superstitious nonsense. His hand was shaking as he unlocked the front door and hurried inside. He expected black nothingness, but was delighted to see the yellow glow of firelight coming from his study doorway upstairs. His old housekeeper, whom he thought would be firmly asleep in her attic bedroom, must have lit the fire pending his return. He shrugged out of his coat and paused for a moment, amazed to find it still warm and dry, though he had walked for more than a mile through a snowstorm. It was almost as if he'd been walking in a bubble of calm air, though he remembered the soft snowflakes hitting his face when he first stepped out of church, before the mysterious footsteps could begin. His shudder was interrupted by a shout of greeting as his old friend Andy came hurrying out of the study. His face lit up in a grin at the unexpected surprise. The two men shook hands heartily and retreated back to the warmth of the firelight. Andy had left town years ago to take a government job in D.C., and they hadn't seen each other since. Nearly an hour passed before it occurred to him that his guest might be hungry. His offer of a meal was instantly accepted, but Andy was unwilling to leave the comfort of the fire to eat in the kitchen. So he jogged downstairs alone to fetch some food. He didn't wonder at his friend's reluctance to join him in the kitchen. Andy had looked very pale and had kept shivering with cold while they talked. He hoped his friend wasn't ailing for anything. A few moments later, he was back with warmed up meat and potatoes and a couple of glasses of beer, apologizing profusely as he handed Andy a plate for the mismatched dinnerware. Andy just laughed and hunkered down to eat. When they were both finished, he showed his friend to a guest room and then tumbled into his own bed to sleep. All his apprehension caused by mysterious footsteps forgotten in the visit of his friend. He jumped out of bed Christmas morning and dashed immediately downstairs to the guest room to rouse his friend. Andy wasn't there, and the bed had not been slept in. He ran down to look in the study, but Andy wasn't there either, and one plate full of food was sitting on the end table beside his old friend's chair. It was completely untouched, though he'd seen Andy eating it from the night before. Skin creeping at the thought, he ran to the kitchen and asked his housekeeper if she'd seen Andy. But the housekeeper had seen no one either the previous night or this morning. He flopped down on the bottom of the staircase, completely baffled. Where had Andy gone? It was a mystery that plagued him all Christmas Day. He was awakened the next morning from a restless sleep by the sound of the front doorbell. He stumbled out of bed and was splashing water from the bedside pitcher onto his sleepy eyes when a knock came at his bedroom door. When he answered, his housekeeper handed him a telegram that had just arrived. As she hurried back downstairs to prepare his breakfast, he opened it curiously, not knowing who would be telegraphing him so urgently. As he read the telegram, he started to tremble. The message was short and to the point. Andy's family regretted to inform him that his old friend Andy had passed away on Christmas Eve in his home in Washington, D.C. He sat down hard on the bed, the telegram fluttering away from his hand. It must have been Andy who had followed him home on Christmas Eve. That would explain the eerie footsteps and the dry coat in the middle of the snowstorm. He knew then that he spent Christmas Eve with a haunted ghost.